I'm Ash.
I'm Elle.
We are Lovey Cosplay.
This is Shit Cosplayers Say, and today we are going to be covering the rest of our trip to Spain, since we felt that one episode was just too much. But we have a ton of updates, because there was, again, another weekend where there was a stupid amount of contests in one weekend.
So many contests.
Speaking of contests, we are so excited to have so many of you wanting to try to do ICL. It's awesome, and, you know, we appreciate the interest, but if you have specific questions regarding how the contest works, what you will be covered, what reimbursement you will have, you need to contact Yomacon, not us. We are just Team USA. We do not work for Yomacon. We do not represent the contest. So please contact the convention with those types of specific questions, because they could change between when we went and now.
Yeah, we can only tell you what our experience was. Right.
We're very excited that so many of you want to try it. But please contact the convention about those specific questions. They are more than happy to help you out.
And check the rules, because a lot of times that information will actually be listed in the rules for these types of contests. So read that first. And then, as always, if you have additional questions, contact the contest coordinator.
Who should be back now from Korea, so you should be able to get a hold of her by the time this airs.
Holy
con weekend.
Con weekends. Oh my goodness. Oh, yikes. Where to start?
I guess we can start with TwitchCon. So for those of you that do not know what TwitchCon's cosplay contest is, it's kind of a unique thing all of its own. You have to log a certain number of hours under a certain hashtag on Twitch with the specific costume. Then apply, and then it is juried, and a few select individuals are flown to California to compete in the actual contest.
Yeah, so we'll take up to 5 people from each category of needlework, effects, armor, and larger than life. So you're capping it at 20 people that they will essentially, they reimburse you is what it is. They don't pay up front, but if you read through all their information, they will reimburse you up to a certain dollar amount for you to spend the weekend at Twitch.
We knew quite a few people in this contest this year.
We did. I was very excited.
Which is really exciting. Not just both judges and contestants.
I know. I didn't know that Casey Renee was judging, so that was a really pleasant surprise.
Yes.
When I logged on, I was like, oh my God.
I mean, it's always a pleasant surprise to see Casey show up.
Yes.
But yes, we knew quite a few people in this contest, which was a lot of fun. And the variety for TwitchCon this year was pretty awesome. They had a really nice variety even within their categories of medium and different use of materials and techniques and things of that nature. They do categories similar to Crown. So you have needlework, FX, armor, and larger than life. So the first place needlework was Mothchild CC, and she did Magda from Diablo 3. First place FX was Perler Tricks. Woohoo! As Tiny Tina from Borderlands 3, the entire costume is made of perler beads. It's quite a sight to see that you can actually do all of that like intricate detailing with perler beads.
The pants are really what got me.
The pants are great. They're probably that and the wig.
Yeah.
The wig really gets me too.
Yeah, I think it's the pants that really got me. It really sold me on it.
Well, and he's got these pants, but he can still walk, which I think is fantastic. Yeah. Because you would think he would have to like waddle, but he doesn't.
No. No, real walking. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. First place armor was Faye Paints as Fatalis Beta plus armor from Monster Hunter World. Larger than life was our friend Ginoza costuming as Battle Gear of the Guardian Serpent. And the artwork was by Thomas Artworks and the source materials World of Warcraft.
I was really excited to see this in person.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
Well, and we had seen the concept design.
A long
Genoza
time ago.
Had shared it with us when we did our points episodes.
Yes.
Back at the beginning of this season. So seeing all the updates and then finally getting to see it walk across the stage was really cool.
I love Genoza's painting style. As a fellow artist, it's something that I really appreciate. I would love to at some point think of something that I want her to paint just to have like on my wall, because yeah. I just love the way that she does this. And I think that's why I love this costume so much, is it's all painted. The whole yes. thing is painted.
It's
every
it's
little
painted.
Inch of this costume is hand detailed, and it's fantastic. Speaking of fans, the fan favorite was Magic Marker Studio as Drill Tusk Tetsukabra, and it is an armor from Monster Hunter Generations. So, as we're gushing, of course, best in show was, in fact, Genoza costuming.
Yay!
Woo!
Speaking of wholesome moments that happened, I sent a picture of this, a screen cap that I took, and I sent it to my dad, who's a WoW nerd. And I was like, hey, check this out. They just won TwitchCon with a costume from WoW. And his response was, WoW is right. And I was like, yep.
It's just, it's so good.
Just go look at it.
You just have to go look at it. And it's one of those kind of like a detailed painting where you see something new every time you look at it.
Yes.
Because there's just so much intricate work done on this costume. It's absolutely stunning.
Crown Championships. So NYCC was this weekend. And they brought back the category awards for NYCC. So that's exciting. So the FX category went to Mr. Abs Fitness as Mojo from X-Men. Needlework went to Dark Carnival Butler with Mon Amour du Cirque from Sakizo. Armor went to CJ Props Studio as, I'm totally going to butcher this, Adrositis from Injustice 2. Third place overall went to Say No to Scrunchies as Evil Lynn from the Masters of the Universe. I was very
yes.
excited to see this costume. I was like, I know exactly what that
yep.
is. Second went to Kakuta as Morgoth the Omen King from Elden Ring. And the champion is the Gnome Queen in the Somnacanth armor from Monster Hunter Rise. And I didn't realize this until last night, but Australia also had their qualifier this weekend. PAX OS was this weekend, and in 2023, Chicago is going to see the return of Alt-F4 cosplay as the Australian champion. So she competed in Chicago in 2020 in her Rotholos armor from Monster Hunter Worlds, and this weekend qualified as Vertigo from Godfall.
We've got a lot of Monster Hunter trending this year, don't we?
Well, in between the Vertigo and Magda, there's cute little moths, and I love
That's
them.
That's true. Oh my god, the moths on Mothchild's dress move, and they're adorable. And if you go to her Instagram, she has little pictures of them doing things together.
Aww.
Like, they took a little nappy nap, and
they're adorable.
It's really cute. I'm like, I want a costume where I have to have little critters that move so I can take silly pictures with them.
Yes.
Because it's adorable.
They're just so cute.
But the moths are super cute. So they're detachable from the dress, too. So she can do other things with them, which is really fun. The mystery contest also happened.
Mystery
so
contest.
G-Koff happened. So G-Koff is a duo performance and craftsmanship contest that occurs in Korea. I cannot tell you how much effort I had to put in to find information about this contest. They post nothing about their own contest. Literally nothing. It is the weirdest thing. There's no video. There's nothing on their socials. There's nothing about G-Koff. The only reason I was able to find information is we know Team USA and Team Spain. And it was from their Instagram posts, and then Holmat was there doing some posting, that we were able to figure out anything about this contest. So G-Koff, your social media manager needs to post more about your contest so people can, like, figure out what happened while they were there. So from what I was able to gather, given the information that was available to me, Third place was Mexico, and they did Lady Debonair and Hikaru Shudo from Magic Knight Rayearth, and that was Dahlias Koss and Emi Hiromi. Second place was Kuwait. They did Woody and Bo Peep from Toy Story, and that was The Med Injection and Hadalock. First place was the Philippines, and they did Kenshin Himura and Shishio Makoto from Rurouni Kenshin, and that was Ej Elric and Babin. My understanding is there may have been a tie for third place, but I couldn't find the exact information, but there is some information that says Taiwan and Mexico tied.
Oh.
But I cannot find a picture of Taiwan with the check, with like the big, the poster board.
Right.
So it is possible that Taiwan and Mexico tied, but I have only seen that information in one place.
So if you are one of the people that attended this mystery contest,
and you want to clear that up for us,
if you would like to clarify this for us, please reach out and we would be happy to do an update.
Also, please go look at what Spain did, because they did One Piece and the costumes are freaking hysterical. I cannot wait till someone finds footage of whatever their skit was, because I need to know. You just have to go look. Gelfire Koss, go look. They look like they probably had one blast of a time doing whatever they did.
Good.
But very, very entertaining. The US did Fate for their performance. But again, I have no idea what they did because we can't find video of G-Koff. So if anyone finds video of G-Koff, let us know, because we're very curious to see what these skits look like. From what I can tell from photos, all three were like fighting skits, essentially. I mean, Woody and Bo were a little bit more slapstick. But from what I can find from pictures and short clips of video, it looked like all three were fighting skits. But it's hard to know because we can't find video of G-Koff.
It's not like some of these other ones where they stream the whole thing.
I know. I'm hoping someone at least recorded it so that it could be posted later. But
well, and I've never found a full edition of G-Koff over the last several years when I've looked for it. I've always found... Usually it's random clips taken by organizers that go with their teams and nothing official from the con itself.
Yeah, which again is strange, I guess. Most of these bigger competitions record their competitions and things of that nature. But I don't know if there's like streaming limitations in Korea or what have you. If anybody finds any footage, let us know, because we'd love to know what people did, because it's just fun to see it. So now that it has been almost like 2 weeks, are there any other thoughts about ICL that come to mind since we have now been separated from it and it is no longer running our lives?
I did really enjoy, I've been able to catch up on my backlog of listening to things since we've been back. And I did really enjoy listening to our episode immediately before we went to ICL where we're like, we're never doing this again. And then our episode after we went to ICL, we're like, we don't know how to do anything else.
It's true. Well, so we're never doing it the way that we did it this time again.
Well, because I want to say, like, very specifically, you're like, are you going to do another international? And you're just kind of like, hell no. Not anytime soon.
We're not going to do it the way we did it this time. And I think that's what we figured out in between then and now, is it wasn't the international itself. It was the way that everything we went through towards this international that we don't want to repeat.
Including my car accident. Well, we'll just not do that again.
And, you know, COVID and like not just things that like we had control over, but all the things that we didn't have control over. We just don't want the experience
tainted.
That experience up to we never want to repeat again.
Right.
We want to repeat the going to the international. We just don't want to repeat the process we went through this last time.
Yeah. Let's not make it take like 4 years.
Well, yeah. And then just all the things that went wrong with trying to get everything put together. So,
yeah.
We just don't want to repeat that experience again. Hopefully we can work that out.
Well, hopefully...
If we're not ready, we don't go to the preliminary. That's the new rule.
feel like that's always been a rule.
Yeah, but we didn't follow it. So.
We say that literally every time.
I know.
We didn't. There was no sewing at ICL. That was a rule.
There was
we
not. We followed it. Because that was a literal rule. You could not do that. You could get disqualified if you were sewing while you were there.
Yeah. So there was none of that.
I mean, that's probably the big one is when we left, we were like, we're never doing this again. And then by the time we came back, we're like, yep, this is all we're going to do now.
This is why we do this. Yeah.
This is all we're going to do. We're not going to do. Well, it doesn't make sense to put all this work and effort in and not go to a international prelim first at this point.
Yeah. And that's totally us speaking from a place of privilege.
Absolutely. Yeah. We understand that we are adults and we have good jobs.
Adult money. And adult jobs with adult time off.
One, we can choose to fly to a prelim if we need to. And two, we can afford to balance out what the convention cannot pay for us to have our experience. So we do understand that there is still a very significant socioeconomic barrier to doing internationals.
Yeah. Well, and like for some of these, like, well, like TwitchCon is a prime example. They give you your travel allowance. Like, I think it says 4 to 5 weeks after you appear at TwitchCon.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have that money up front to be able to spend to even go to finals. And then, you know, you'll get a check later.
Right. And with how flights are, you never know what they're going to be. I mean, we've been looking at flights because we want to do, you know, some conventions that aren't here in the Midwest. And we've seen drastic differences. Like, if you're not near a big airport, your flight's going to double because you have to take more than one flight. And it used to be that things would be almost less expensive because it was an inconvenience. And now it's like, well, you're taking two planes, so we have to double your ticket. So if you don't live within driving distance of a large airport, your ticket price could be absurd.
Well, and then that's just more time that you have to take off work.
Right. Well, and then it may not...
For your layovers.
You know, depending on what they give you as coverage... Like, your ticket price could end up being half of your coverage, but then somebody else who's closer, it might only be, like, a quarter.
Well, and that was the thing that I was looking at with their, like, travel allowance. I'm like, is that even going to cover a flight to San Diego and 3 nights in a hotel?
Probably like, not. My guess is probably not. So you have to take that into consideration with these. And, you know, we get that there's that big... economic barrier for a lot of these contests, and that we have the ability to kind of just be like, we'll worry about it later, which is great, but we know that most people don't have that option. My thing with ICL, and I wasn't going to mention it, but I feel like a lot of people probably go through this, is my social anxiety kicked in really badly after ICL. So now my brain has been going through all the things that I probably did wrong while I was there. And I know that a lot of other people go through this, too, after big events like this. So, you know, I figured I'd throw it out there. But that's been kind of rough because now I'm replaying everything going, I wonder if this mistake ended up causing us this problem, or this mistake, did it do this? Is this why, you know, this didn't happen? Or because, you know, I just assume that everything I do is a problem when my social anxiety is really bad. So hopefully I didn't annoy any of you too much. Kind of where that's at. So that's fun. I'm going to have to figure out a better way to manage that next time we have a international, but there's only so much you can do. So a lot of you have asked us a lot of questions about traveling, and we couldn't really answer them before we left because we had no experience with traveling before we left. So we can now give you more information about traveling with large costumes. We will mention that we had a direct flight, so we did not have to worry as much about the lost bag situation. You'll see a lot of people on forums post, we'll just carry everything on. Yeah, if you have a tiny costume, that'll work great.
Right?
But you would have to have a very small costume for that to work. And most of the time, you cannot carry weapons on. Because they're too big. So even if you can prove that they're fake, like if you have a set of swords, they're not small enough to be a carry-on. You have to check them and hope they get there. So, you know, yes, that's great advice if you have a costume small enough that fits into a carry-on, and then 9 times out of 10, your overhead carry-on ends up under the plane anyway. Now, yes, it's less likely to get lost because they put it directly under the plane, but, you know, that's not necessarily the best advice with a lot of this because you're not going to be able to carry your entire costume on the plane. I mean, it's just not, it's not feasible. Like, Judar almost would have fit in a carry-on suitcase, except for the wig. I mean, if we would have smashed Kogyoku, we might have gotten her into one.
Maybe.
But it's just not, it's not super feasible. So I know that seems like the most logical option. Instead, you need to carry on maybe the most fragile parts that you can. We definitely need to look at different ways of bringing wigs because our wigs, from the pressure of being smashed in with everything else, were a disaster and were really hard to fix afterward. And they were just basic base wigs. So,
well, and I don't even know if I would want to pack my most fragile items with me in a carry-on because I would have more space and more control over putting like something hard inside of the actual packed bag to protect it, as opposed to something I'm going to be carrying around and slinging around and shoving under
right.
a seat or
well,
throwing
and I thought
in an
about
overhead
that
compartment.
Too, is like if we were to travel with more fragile wigs, like would it actually make more sense to pack them in a box in the suitcase where they can't move than try to carry them and put them in the overhead and then you hope it fits in the overhead? And
yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, I think, is taking some extra precautions in the checked baggage.
And apparently everyone's other advice was don't fly American because apparently they lose all your stuff. But that's what we flew to Spain and we were fine. But again, we did a direct flight. So the best way to reduce the likelihood of them losing your luggage is to do a direct flight, if you can. Because we have found in our research that our 3-hour drive to Chicago is typically less than if we were to take 2 planes. And then the tickets are half the price.
Now, I will say that the drive home
was awful.
Towards the end of it kind of sucked.
It did.
And by that point, it's you're between a rock and a hard place because, yeah, we felt fine when we got off the plane because it was the middle of the afternoon and like there had been naps taken on the plane. And yeah, we could have stayed and we could have slept and then gone home like the next day. But, you know, you at that point, you've been gone and you really just want to go home to your bed.
Yep.
And it's like, yay. I wonder if the like happy medium to that would be if we could con somebody into taking us to the airport, like from here.
I mean, that could possibly be worked out if my parents happen to be in town.
Right.
But
because that's what I'm kind of wondering is, would it be worth it to con somebody into taking us to the airport and then picking us up from the airport so that we don't have to physically drive?
I mean, that'll be a thing we'll just have to deal with because any of these other contests are significantly longer flights and I don't think we'll be driving home after them anyway. So I think that's a moot point anyway because they're double, if not triple. So I don't think we'll be driving home anyway. And there really isn't anywhere that far in the United States to fly from Chicago. Like, I think the furthest flight from Chicago is like 6 hours within the United States. So.
And that even seems like a lot.
So it's a future problem.
Sure.
Because it's only going to matter if we're going somewhere really, really, really far again. Yes, it's that weird middle ground of like, do you just stay and sleep and go back the next day? Or do you just go because you're tired of traveling? Which we've run into driving to before. I mean, we had one time on our way to Colossal Con, which is only 8 hours, and we had to stop like 2 or 3 hours before we got there because we just couldn't do it anymore. Like, we couldn't keep driving. So it happens. Well, and I don't think it helped either that we both caught a significant cold while we were in Spain.
I know.
So I'm sure that did not help our ability to drive home. No, we did not get COVID. But
I was very disappointed because if it had been COVID, I would have got 10 days off of work.
Right?
But it's of course, it's not COVID.
No.
So I did not get
time
off of work.
Quite a few people did catch a pretty nasty cold after, after Japan weekend. So... which I'm still fighting because I got a sinus infection after it. So it's like the never-ending cold now.
This is the cold that does
it. Pretty much. So what we did learn about our long flight is that if you can afford it, upgrade to like economy premium. Because it is a very small place for a very long flight. We didn't bother because we're like 9 hours. You know, the first flight was only 7.5. But then going back was 9. And we were like, well, that doesn't sound that bad. We sit in a car for that long. Like, it should be fine. Forgetting that, you know, when you drive in a car, you get out like every like 2 to 3 hours.
Sure.
And yeah, it was tight. It was very tight. We got lucky that we got seats both times on the wall that are just the two seats and we weren't stuck in the four.
Yeah.
But it was tight. So if you can do that. I also, thanks to Paisley and Glue, bought a foldable travel seat for my back, which helped significantly because I was really worried about back problems. So that helped a lot, as well as the compression socks helped for me having a lot of pains in my legs. Because that helps continue your circulation when you're sitting for such long periods. Because people will tell you you can get up and move around the plane, and you can't.
There's a caveat with the getting up and moving around the plane. Because, yeah, you can get up and move around the plane, A, as long as there's room, and B, as long as you don't have the seatbelt sign there. If there's turbulence and they say, hey, you can't do that, then you can't do that.
One of the big things I noticed, too, was don't overpack your under the seat bag, because I didn't overpack mine. And it was still hard to get it to fit. So even though it fit within the like measurement requirements and actually was smaller, it still had trouble fitting under the seat. And don't bring your computer because there's not enough space to actually use it. And you have to pay like €6 an hour for internet. So,
oh, on the plane.
Yeah. So the computer was basically a worthless brick, except for the one time we recorded. So I've decided if we're going overseas, we're just not bringing it because it's heavy and it's a pain in the butt to carry around the airport.
Yeah.
So,
like any other airport experience, I would tell you to bring an empty water bottle with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't obviously take liquids through TSA, but you want to make sure that you have fluids, and they have those, the water bottle refill stations pretty much like every bathroom in the airport. So you can just go and get filtered water there, and not have to pay for it.
A lot of people have asked us about packing. So you're going to need bubble wrap and you're going to need tissue paper, and you're going to want to pack things in a way that they're not going to move around. So we used a lot of clothes in between things to keep it like situated. Hard-sided suitcases, definitely.
Don't be afraid to pack hard-sided things inside of your suitcase if you have something that needs protected from the rest of the contents or even just the weight of everything being shifted around.
We did that with my jewelry because my jewelry is made of foam and we were worried that it would get squashed. So my jewelry was in plastic containers to try to protect it. We had lots of advice before we went. Wigwig Cosplay helped us out a little bit with some things they did. But a thing that can be very helpful, especially if you have weapons, is a picture map of your suitcase and an explanation of everything in both languages that you may be dealing with to try to reduce the likelihood that they are going to damage your things.
If you're bringing fake firearms, please bring your whip books.
Yes, this saved UK because on their way out, the security wanted to confiscate their Star Wars guns. And they even like snapped one in half to show them that it was fake.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because they brought out the book and showed them how it was made. And they were still like, no, you can't have these. I think they're trying to carry them on.
Oh.
So I think that was part of the problem. I think they did everything with a carry-on, it kind of sounds like, but I'm not sure.
I'm kind of jealous of
that. I think they're trying to carry them on, because otherwise they wouldn't have been there to explain them.
Right.
So, I think that was the problem, and they just kept going, no, you can't have these, because they're guns. And so, I mean, props to you, you obviously made them well enough that they thought they were real. But they did, they brought out their whip book and had to show them, like, look, it's fake. Like, it's not real, it doesn't do anything, and then eventually they had to snap one in half. to show them that, like, look, it's not real. It's not a real gun. Please let us through. I'm sure the language barrier didn't help either. So. Sure.
Yeah.
But that's why we were like, okay, so if we ever do weapons, we just need to check them because there's no way that anyone's letting them through. But yes, having explanations, maps, put your whip book with your stuff so they don't have to, like, dig through and damage things to figure out what it is. Put things in the language that you are going to so they don't have to try to figure it out as best you can. And that's harder for some places, like, you know, it's not too hard to get a Spanish translation, but for some places it might be a little bit more difficult.
Right.
But the best that you can, even if it's the terrible Google Translate, at least they'll have a rough idea of what you're trying to tell them.
Well, and if you have it in your native language and in Google Translate, it's better than nothing.
Exactly. And we got lucky. TSA didn't touch our stuff either way. So nobody, we do recommend getting TSA pre-check. Because I think that had a lot to do with, at least in the United States. Because they are less likely to go through your things if you have TSA pre-check. Because you've already had a background check and, like, all these things done. Again,
they've already determined there's a low risk that you're right. Not a terrorist.
Again, privilege, because we were able to pay for it to do it. And it does have to be renewed from time to time. But you get to go through the shorter line, which is nice. And they are less likely to touch your things.
And you don't have to take your shoes off.
And you don't have to take your shoes off. So there you go. We are going to reiterate to not bother bringing items that do not have a temperature gauge because they will not work in the adapters. They will blow up. We had so much wasted space of items we could not use.
Yeah, space and weight.
It still annoys me. There was so much space. Like, the more, like, as I was putting things away, I'm like, there's so much space and weight that we wouldn't have had. If we hadn't needed, we didn't bring all these appliances that we then couldn't use.
Right?
Well, and Wigwig had warned me that their steamer did this, but I didn't put two and two together that it was because it didn't have a temperature gauge.
Oh.
So I didn't realize that then the hairdryer, the steamers, like, none of it would work because it didn't have a temperature gauge on it. But as we've mentioned before, buying the steamer was cheaper than buying an adapter. So, hey, now we have a European steamer for this problem.
We had adapters, and we tried multiples of them, so we knew it wasn't necessarily that issue.
No, it wasn't the adapter itself. It was definitely the fact that there was no temperature gauge on the item, and therefore the item was probably not coded for 220, and so it couldn't handle the voltage. You are going to want to bring things that are hard to find, and some hard-to-find items you may not think of. So, like, if you think you're going to need pain meds, cold meds, those kind of things, bring them with. You need to bring them in their bottles because they want any medication in a bottle when you travel at least to Spain. But bring them because it's going to be hella difficult to figure out what the equivalent is in another country in another language. However, we did find that we could have easily purchased things like hairspray, shampoo, soap, that kind of stuff. While we were there at Aldi.
Or the bodega around the street from our other hotel.
So some things you might not have to necessarily bring with you could be some of those items. Because I know some people, when they travel, they just buy their toiletries when they get over there.
Mm-hmm.
So that, especially if you're just doing carry-ons. I've done that before. But we weren't sure how that was going to roll. But what's nice about not having to put these liquids in bags is you reduce... the likelihood of spillage on your costumes. Like, we made sure that our liquid items weren't packed with our costumes, just so that if there was an issue, it would get on our clothes, not on our costumes. But it is something you have to consider.
And even then, so, like, for, like, the BioClean, we put it in a bottle, and then I put Saran Wrap on top of it, and then put the lid on it and tightened it down there, so it had two barriers there. I then put it in a snack size Ziploc bag and then put that bag inside of another bag.
Yes, it was bagception for most liquids so they wouldn't spill.
So there were like four barriers between the BioClean and the rest of the suitcase,
because the downside to a hard-sided suitcase is you don't have those outer pockets, so everything has to go inside. But the upside is your stuff is less likely to get damaged, because I was shocked by the amount of scuffs, and, like, my poor suitcase is brand new, and now it looks like it's been through, like, a war, and I need to go get a magic eraser and clean it. Because that's how kind they are to your suitcases in this process. I mean, we watched them literally tumble down in O'Hare from the thing onto the luggage rack. Like, they are not kind to your stuff. So
right.
You're better off with a suitcase that's full so things can't bounce around. But speaking of packing things, so the one thing we skimped on was our own personal clothing to reduce the amount of suitcases we had. But then you have to consider, how are you going to wash clothes? So we did bring Woolite so that we could wash things in the original hotel. But if you decide to stay, either finding a laundromat or finding a hotel that has a washer and dryer is going to be super helpful, because then you don't necessarily need to pack enough clothes for the entire time you're there. You'll be able to wash them. Because like in ICL's case, they only pay for one suitcase per person. Then any additional suitcase you need to pay for yourself, and we were already paying $100 for a third suitcase. We did not want to pay another $100 for another suitcase. We skimped on regular clothes, but made sure that our second hotel had a washer and dryer. And it worked out. Also, the one thing we didn't think about was paying attention to what costumes you're bringing and what shoes. Because shoes take up a lot of room and a lot of weight.
Always wear your biggest, heaviest shoes on the plane.
Yep. Don't take the shoes out of your suitcase that you actually need, and then you have to go buy shoes in Spain because you were trying to reduce weight and didn't realize that you took out the shoes that you use for Judar rather than the other shoes that you didn't need.
Oops.
Yeah, that was great. So then I had to buy shoes in Spain, which is fun.
Ooh, one thing we didn't mention that I would totally recommend is we took in our carry-on a luggage scale.
Yes.
So when we were repacking everything, well, when we were packing in general, it was very helpful. But when we were repacking everything at our second hotel, because the first day that we were there, we went ahead and packed away everything that we weren't going to need pretty much immediately, and just got our whole third suitcase out of the way and close to capacity. And we were able to do that because we had a scale with us, and it's, if you've never seen one, it's just this little handheld thing with a hook on it, and you put the hook through the handle on the suitcase, and you just lift it up, and then it tells you how much it weighs, and it's super lightweight and tiny and totally worth it. Way better than paying overages.
Absolutely, yeah, because if we had gone over 50 pounds, our luggage would have gone from $100 to $360.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, it was a massive jump, like ridiculous. So definitely did not want that to happen.
Oh, and pay for your luggage in advance, because we actually, because we paid for it online instead of at the terminal, we ended up saving like 20 euro, so it only cost 80 euro instead of 100 each way. So it was still 160, but that's way better than 200.
So the one thing we had made the decision about, and it would have been an even better idea if we would have ended up being able to dispose of all of it, but 50% of our set ended up being disposable. And that was so we wouldn't have to bring as much back with us to the United States. There were definitely pros and cons to this. Because we had intended to throw out all of it. And then if we had done that, we could have done a makeshift box that would have only gone one way to Spain. And so that $100 would have only been paid once. But in the process of packing, we ended up with this extra bag of stuff. And we were like, there's no way we're going to end up needing the suitcase to come back, because I'm not dragging this stupid duffel bag around the airport again, because it was heavy and awkward and just was not going to work. But you could potentially design your set so that you could get rid of everything. But since we ended up in this situation with this extra bag, we ended up keeping the pipes and getting rid of the cardboard. I liked the cardboard. And why I liked the cardboard was because when you pack fabric, it gets super, super wrinkled. And then you have to try to iron it, where the cardboard just folded out and it was done. And I'm kind of feeling the cardboard.
Yeah.
Because when you're traveling, when your hotel for a contest is not at the contest, it is very hard to get a fabric backdrop to a place that doesn't end up looking terrible by the time you're there. And then you have to have the time to like steam it while you're there once it's set up. Cardboard is also a lot cheaper and it is recyclable. And I have a stupid stack of backdrops in my closet that I need to throw out because there's really nothing else I can do with them. Because in the United States, once you have won an award, you can't use it again. So I have a stupid amount of backdrops with no purpose, where if they were cardboard, I could just recycle them. So I'm kind of feeling this like cardboard deal right now. It's also a lot easier to paint on.
Yeah.
Which I like as the painter. It would be a lot easier to do more details on cardboard than it would be on a fabric backdrop.
Yeah.
It's closer to like a stage flat. So it's much easier to work with.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is they do take up a little bit more room in a suitcase on the way there.
But they do, I mean, it's cardboard though, so we made it so that it would fold flat, and it did. So it took up as much space as cardboard does. And like other cardboard, it's got, you know, it's corrugated, and so it does have some compression to it. But like, it would have been impossible for us to try to steam that, because I don't think I ever actually found an outlet.
Mm-mm.
Backstage where we were. We would have had to like run around the convention hall hoping to find electricity somewhere.
No, fabric
with
would
our
have...
steamer that we had to purchase while we were overseas.
Yeah, there's so for that far of a trip, there's no way I would do fabric for a backdrop. There's no way. Like, if I did have to, it would have to be done in a very specific fashion.
Yeah.
Where, like, it getting wrinkled may not matter as much to the overall, like...
aesthetic.
Yeah, maybe we starch it quite a bit or something, because there's no... Because now I'm thinking about, oh, yeah, no, for that one particular thing, we do need fabric. Maybe I can attach the fabric to the cardboard and then fold it up, and therefore it won't get super wrinkled. Because it's attached to the cardboard. But, yeah, I liked it. I think it's a lot easier. It's a lot less expensive. It's really easy to attach. You can attach it literally to anything with zip ties. So that's also easier because fabric is a little bit more finicky about what it can and cannot be attached to. And you can just zip tie this sucker like to whatever you want, which is great. No grommets needed. You just poke a hole and you put some glue on it and you zip tie it. Like, boom. But because of how our rules work in the States, we're pretty much, you win something, you can't use it again. Why do I want something that's meant to be used multiple times when I may not get to? Like, then I just have these stupid backdrops sitting around. So,
just sitting around, taking up space.
Because yes, and people were all like, you threw your set out, you guys didn't win. What if you like want to do it again? We can't, guys.
Yeah.
It's considered winning an award just to go. By most United States conventions. So even though we probably remade like 50% of these costumes, most conventions still would, and we did 75% new skit, most conventions would not allow us to compete because we went to an international. They consider it winning an award in the United States.
It's frowned upon here.
It is. Well, and considering we technically won the preliminary with the same characters, I think that's more of the issue. I think if it had been a completely new costume and skit, we might be able to talk people into it. But even
sure.
Then, they're like, you were in an international winning an award. Because the U.S. is really, really particular. But I think if we ever have any of our European friends on, we'll talk a lot about that big difference.
Yeah.
Because well, I'm Team Europe on their thought process behind a lot of this reusing things. So
I think for a lot of cons, too, we won the award. And B, we would have had to be able to very specifically document every single change that we made to the costumes to take them from point A to point B. And then even then, even if it's not technically against the rules and they let you do it, a lot of judges, unfortunately, will still take that into account, even though it's not against the rules and you cleared it with the coordinator.
It's not worth the effort to try to take it somewhere else, honestly.
Yeah.
And we're kind of over it, so.
Yes.
I don't want to do it again, so I think it's fine.
It's great.
So a little bit about the rest of Spain in general. I refer to day one as the crashening because we did nothing.
The crashening.
I was in so much pain the first day after ICL that we literally, like, we just slept and did laundry. We did nothing.
We ate breakfast.
We did eat breakfast.
We repacked the one suitcase.
Yes.
We did get
our banner into the
yes,
suitcase.
I folded the banner up. I've decided I'm going to make a flat, I think, to put it on and like stretch it like canvas.
Oh, there you go.
I think that'll be the best way to display it.
There you go.
And then it's portable and I could just move it around.
You can just put it in different places in your room when you want to change in decor.
Yes, I can. I think that sounds like a great plan. But yeah, we did laundry. We got the banner packed up and the rest of the suitcase packed up. The banner actually goes really nicely. I folded it into thirds and then rolled it, and it takes up almost no space. So it takes up less space than our PVC does.
That's true. It does.
So, because I would have totally thrown out the PVC if it had been a
absolutely.
Choice between the two.
Oh, that PVC was going. The banner was coming home. I don't care about the PVC. The banner was coming home. Like,
day two, we actually like did go out and we did a lot of walking and did a bunch of things. So we started at El Retiro Park, and they've got lots of cool stuff going on there. Like, they've got this huge monument to, I believe it's Alfonso the 12th. And it's got these giant statues and huge columns and these big lions and fountains going into this lake where people had little paddle boats. That was really cool. We went to, was it La Rosalita, which was this rose garden with, again, lots of fountains and obviously flowers in it. That was super gorgeous. They also had one of the Crystal Palaces is there in Retiro Park, which is like a giant greenhouse, which this one was closed. They were doing some work on the inside, but the outside was all open and available for people to walk around it. And there was a little pond, again, with fountains. There were also people playing the violin outside. And it was a fun experience just to kind of like sit and listen to them in this like tranquil scenic area.
That was a theme, by the way, while we were in Spain, was this monument or this attraction that everyone wants to see is closed.
Yes.
Was a big theme. Well,
it was
we
a big
there.
Theme.
Literally everything they tell you to go see was closed.
Yeah,
while we were there.
Well, because the Puerta de Alcalá, which is the archway with the five arches, was under construction. So they had the draping, like the tarps on the outside to keep the stonework from falling off, and then they had a picture of it printed on the outside.
Yeah. And the Plaza de Mejor was closed.
It was Plaza de Sol.
Plaza de Sol
was completely like there was fencing and everything because the whole place was under construction. Yeah, it was. And then on the third day, we actually tried to go to the other Crystal Palace, which was in a different park. And that one was legit closed, like scaffolding and barriers inside. They actually had the greenery in that one, but apparently, we just weren't destined to go inside of
apparently,
one.
Apparently, September's not a good time to go to Spain because everything is under construction.
Or at least this September
apparently,
was not a good time to go to Spain.
I don't know.
But more importantly, on day two, we went to the Prado.
We did.
Oh, my goodness.
So that is one of the largest art museums in the world. It's the Prado.
It's a Spanish National Art Museum.
My art major self was very excited to step into the Prado. Just because you talk about it a lot. It's like the Louvre. Like, if I ever got to go to the Louvre, I would, like, lose my shit. So, you know, I've already been to the Met because I used to live in New York. But,
I mean, we've already established that we just need to go to France anyway.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, we'll go to the Louvre while we're
obviously
there.
We have to just go to France to see France. So,
France. We had to go to France to see Team France.
Yes.
But also the country. Mostly Paris.
So it is a massive art museum.
Yeah.
But it's all like old art history, so no modern.
Yes, no contemporary art. They have a separate museum nearby for that.
Yes, which was also closed.
I think that was just because of the day of the week
I think it's just closed on that particular day of the week. But
The day that we were nearby, it was closed.
Yes.
So we're like, oh, well, I guess we won't go.
Yep.
Which was fine. Because the Prado was... Between the park and the Prado, it was a ton of walking anyway.
I was struggling. You know when you go through art museums and there's like the big benches every like few rooms? I sat down, I think, at every one because I was really struggling by that day.
Yeah.
It was not doing so hot, so.
I really enjoyed all the parts that had been reclaimed from the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And like they actually had where they had like taken like the wooden beams. There was like a ceiling from one of them. Like this really old church that was just like hanging out. They had a couple halls of that. I did have like a little bit of a like an in awe moment when we got to the Da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very strict theme of they had a lot of art from very well known artists, but they might only have one piece. Like the Rembrandts, the Da Vinci. So the Da Vinci that we saw is one of the earlier renditions of the Mona Lisa. And just like being in its presence was just like, I can't really describe the feeling. It was very odd to me. It's not something I've really experienced before, and I don't really know how to describe it.
Yeah, it was for me seeing a lot of these paintings that we talked about when I was in college, like in person, was wild. It's like this actually exists like in real life, and it's always funny when you see a painting in real life because you're inevitably your brain's gonna go, wow, that's a lot smaller than I thought it was, or wow, that's a lot bigger than I thought it was, because you don't have a great concept of the size of them when you're just learning about it from like a book or a presentation.
Yeah, like books and PowerPoints do not do these justice in real life.
But, like, it was exciting to see, like, Caravaggio in person because we talked about Caravaggio all the time. And, like, you know, Rembrandt and all these, you know, Goya. Actually getting to see Saturn. Like, Goya's Saturn is, like, a major, major piece of history. And they had it. And it's, like, this is wild that, like, these pieces are actually here, like, physically in front of you.
Yeah, these things that you've always heard of throughout your art classes for, like, the longest time. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and they and had a lot of the artists that I really like, which is,
your
like,
fave was there.
Oh, my God, I lost my mind. I fangirled over a painting.
I walked away and just let Elle have her moment in front of this painting
so
for as long as she needed it.
I've always been a big fan of surrealism, and one of the first surrealists is Bosch. Not only did they have Bosch, they had the Bosch. Like, the painting. They had the Garden of Earthly Delights on display, which is a triptych of, like, Adam and Eve's garden, Earth, and then Hell. And it is a wild time.
It really is.
This painting is super trippy, but it is literally my favorite painting of all time. I did, like, a big research paper on this thing. Like, this painting had a big influence on, like, what I ended up doing for my, like, dissertation for school. Like, it was a big, big thing. I had no idea it was there because
Surprise!
My understanding was it's in Belgium. I didn't know that the Prado had it. And we walk through this room and I just stop and I'm like, wait, what? And I'm like, it's got to be a reproduction. It's like, it's not. It's the actual painting, which was way bigger than I expected it to be, which is funny. But just when you put the measurements, like, you have these, like, non-tangible measurements, and then you actually see it in real life. But because of its size, you can see all the little intricate, crazy details that are in this painting. Bosch was a time. He had syphilis and likely schizophrenia, so his work is very interesting. No, I probably stood there for, like, 10 minutes and was just like, it's actually here. And I can physically see my favorite painting of all time, and I need nothing else now for the rest of this trip.
Well, and
because
we were
this painting,
like,
is in my presence.
We were talking about looking at, like, Ganoza's costume earlier and all the details where you're like, oh, this detail, oh, this detail, oh, this detail, oh, this detail. That was this painting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could stare at this painting for literally hours and see something new every couple minutes. I mean, there's just so much happening. None of it makes sense because you don't try to make sense out of Bosch.
You'll just hurt
your head. Don't try.
That style of painting, you're just like, okay.
You take it for what,
cool.
I mean, there's a shitload of symbolism in it, but, like, you just have to take it for what it is, on the surface, if you're going to appreciate it. But that was a very unexpected part of our trip that I'm really sad you're not allowed to take photos in the museum because I wanted a selfie with my favorite painting, and
oh.
You can't do that. At the Prado.
Yeah. No. I was also very impressed that everybody seemed to be following that. Yes, I don't think I saw.
I didn't see anybody take.
I don't think I saw phones out at all.
Mm-mm. No,
like everybody was just in the moment.
Yeah,
experiencing like all this artwork.
Well, it was very
them.
Quiet too, which is not what I've experienced in American art museums. People
Shocking.
Were very good about not like talking while they yeah. were in there. Just everyone was kind of quiet, doing their own thing.
Yeah, it was a treat to say the least.
Well, and then our last day was when we tried to go to the garden that was closed.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went back and kind of regrouped and realized that a lot of things that we looked at were just going to be like too far, and we were just not feeling it. So we ended up going to the Kauai Cafe that we passed on our tour.
Oh, yes.
When we were with the whole group.
Yes, we did do that.
It was adorable.
It was super cute. We got like colored coffee.
Yes, they had like blue coffee and pink coffee. And
I got these rainbow pancakes that were just super cute.
I had some kind of like parfait sort of deal.
Yeah.
No, it was adorable. It was real cute. But yeah, we didn't do a ton on day three either because it was just kind of like, I think we were ready to go at that point. Like, I think I probably could have headed home that day and it would have been fine. I think we were just kind of like, okay, we're over this now. Time to go.
Yeah, we went shopping a little bit. After dinner, we got churros and chocolate. It was kind of a chill day, too. Like, our day two in the new hotel was definitely our run day.
Yeah.
Day three was just kind of winding down, and we recorded before we went to bed. And
well, and at this point, this cold really hit us, too. So we're not...
I had it really bad, like, that Monday. And then after that, it's been mostly fine. Although, I will say, even a couple weeks later, I still have this, like, weird lingering cough where I will have absolutely no congestion. Like, I can talk fine. I can breathe normally. And then just, like, I don't know if it's cold air or what. Maybe, like, the way I'm laying or sitting. All of a sudden, it'll just hit me. And I'll either have, like, one cough or, like, a whole coughing fit, like, twice a day.
Yeah.
And then it goes away, and I'm like, this is so weird.
It hit me more on Wednesday, so I was pretty miserable.
Yeah.
I did not
all
get
the antihistamines.
Coughing, just excessive amounts of sinus, so.
Yeah.
And no, friends, it was not COVID, so. Honestly, I was more sick with this than when I had COVID. Like, COVID was over faster. Like, I'm still dealing with whatever this was, and I'm like, I want it to go away. But that's because I got a sinus infection afterward. But yeah, that was our adventure for the rest of Spain. We will be back to our regularly scheduled programming from here on out. Next is the Halloween episode. Thank you to everyone who submitted for the Halloween episode. We had way more submissions than we could ever possibly use on an episode, so please don't be hurt if your story is not read. But we will be doing an episode about cosplay and Halloween for our Halloween episode this year.
Well, I'm Ash.
I'm Elle.
We are Lovey Cosplay.
And this is Shit Cosplayers Say.
You've been listening to Shit Cosplayers Say, an LVC production. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at PodcastSCS. Our website is LoveyCosplay.com. Have a fun, crazy con or cosplay-related story? Absurd cosplay question? Or just something in general to share with us, email us at podcastscs@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and remember, just because you can, doesn't mean you should.